Welcome to Giant Conversations number 4. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, Oliver.
This will be a special one. So you just returned from KubeCon.
Yep.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see how this works. So we're trying, like, this is like at KubeCon recorded things, and we'll cut them into this podcast and kind of have different people talking about different things. But obviously, we start up with our song, and I played with Suno.ai, which allows you to make music, and it's...
What's the name of the song?
KubeCon in the house. Or let's be honest, it's not perfect. It's KubeCon in the house.
All right.
Roll it, Tommy.
Mic check, 1, 2, let me introduce the conference of the year, KubeCon in the house. We're bringing the heat, we're bringing the groove. Get ready to learn, get ready to shout. Yeah. We gather around the globe, techies unite. From San Diego to Amsterdam, we're taking flight. Talking containers, Kubernetes and cloud native. Innovative minds, let's collaborate. Let's go. KubeCon in the house, yeah, we're taking it high. Welcome to the stage where the future's alive. Learning, connecting and pushing boundaries. KubeCon in the house, it's our community.
That's great.
So that's just, I mean, I'm very sorry. And it's just a very short prompt. So that thing does it all by itself. I've been lost in making music. A new Spotify star is born.
I think we should all be scared at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm really not sure if I'm excited or just scared how this will end up in a year. So we'll see. It's version 3. It's really nice. It's fun to play with. So play with it. But we're on to more important things. So you went to KubeCon, Tommy.
Yes. And the whole team went there. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. There were 22 swarmies at KubeCon. It was held in Paris this year. There were, I'm going to estimate, about 12,000 people. That's the numbers we got beforehand. They'll come out with better numbers in a week or so. But overall, wonderful atmosphere, excited people, great, great swag, fun parties. And I do have to say that the stereotypes of the Parisians, I think, is completely wrong from what I heard in the past. It's the they don't speak English, or they're not nice to you if you try to speak French. The service was at the highest level. The food was excellent. So
the food at KubeCon was excellent. That's not what I heard.
No.
You mean the food in general?
In Paris.
In Paris.
Okay. Yes. The food.
So KubeCon stuck with their guns, and like, food is still shit.
Yes, absolutely. Which, you know, it's almost a fun thing to start to keep complaining about, but you're feeding 12,000 people almost 3 square meals a day. I mean, it's not an easy task. So I am going to give them some slack. They had something for everybody. But still, I guess people have a very high bar when it comes to the food that they're going to eat. Personally, I just wolf it down and head back to the booth. So I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, okay. I just saw the pictures. I have food, and you saw pictures from McDonald's.
Like, yeah. Well,
across the street, there was McDonald's.
Exactly. Yeah, that is exactly right. But yeah, KubeCon was great. So what we did is we gathered about a dozen people and put together a large list of questions for them to be able to choose from, and set up a mic just in as quiet of a room as we could. And we got quite a few people to answer these questions. Here's a handful of them.
My name is Ivana. I work for Duhop, which is a software company from Iceland.
My name is Pini Resnik. I'm from Resync, CEO and co-founder of Resync.
My name is Engin Diri, and I work as a customer experience architect at Pulumi.
This is Julia. I'm with Giant Swarm, and I'm a relationship manager.
I'm Frederick. I'm the founder of a company called Polar Signal.
Courtney Nickerson, and I'm here with KubeShop as a developer advocate representing our project called TestCube.
That's an impressive list.
It was a nice list. We did everything from just pull people who were coming out of one of the talks. Like, hey, do you have 2 minutes? Just answer a couple questions. They were totally cool with that. All the way up to a couple of owners who, of course, Puya and Timo and our swarmy colleagues know, and they just grabbed them for a few minutes. It didn't take 5 minutes for each of the folks to come in and answer these questions. Before we get to the real questions, the hard-hitting ones, one of them was, what is the best swag that you got at the
booth. Very important.
Yes, definitely. And I had no idea. It is overwhelming.
I really like that there are a lot of plushies that I can bring home.
And these plushies are adorable.
Plushies, and this is also very cute and nice, especially when you have children and you want to bring them something back.
They're plushies.
The best swag is actually at the Kube Shop booth. We have these amazing Kube plushies.
So the last one you heard, they're all, everybody, one person said shirts, but that's just because he was kissing our butt and he said the Giant Swarm shirts. And I was like, well, I'm not going to put that in there. The last one was Courtney Nickerson. We're going to hear a little bit more from her about monetizing open source, but we'll get to that. That's one of the more hard hitting questions.
Okay. So the plushies, just plush toys.
Plushies, just plush toys.
We can probably search for it on the internet and like we can add a picture to the, maybe we can make the podcast picture of today the picture of a plushie.
We could. It wouldn't be difficult with AI.
Yeah. Cool. And so you just grabbed them and made sure they answer a few questions, and we kind of ordered them around a few different topics.
That's right. And five main topics really stood out in the audience. First was we talked about the topics that they had visited and some of the best topics and talks that they had gone to. We also asked what the hottest topics were in general. And then we threw the curveball about talking about monetizing open source. So the ones that stood out were AI, eBPF, WebAssembly, sustainability, and of course the last piece that I talk about, which is kind of the bulk of what we'll be going over at the end here, which is the open source monetization. A lot of passion in that question.
Nice. Yeah, but it's... If you would have put a gun to my head, I would have probably said several of those. I mean, AI obviously, like, okay, we'll have to have AI. Like for the next 2 years, we'll have until the next hype comes. And AI is an old shoe, and like we're all like just dumb people running around the world, and like AI is ruling everything. But eBPF, yes, seeing that more and more, fully agreed. WebAssembly seems to be kind of a slowly launching into that space where it gets interesting, and sustainability is interesting for everybody. Admittedly, I think it's still a lot of cost saving for people and mimicked with sustainability, but we'll see what people say. So what do we start with?
So we're going to start with AI, and people really did have the same idea, just what you said. It's AI. We have to talk about it. But in many cases, it was kind of like, we just need to do it. There's no real solutions or to-dos. It's AI is here. It's the future. Let's pay attention to it. So we do start off with Pini Resnick, and that's pretty much what he gathered from the talks that he went to.
What's interesting is an amount of talking about the AI in Cloud Native Conference, which is general infrastructure conference, and I am impressed the amount of investment in AI field by everyone, basically. But it feels a bit overwhelming, and it's not really clear that everyone understands the problem AI is trying to solve, and just trying to go and do AI.
Just trying to go and do AI. Making songs.
I will make so many songs out of this. I fully agree with Pini there. I mean, the thing is, and that's a general notion out there at the moment. Like, yes, the hardware vendors are a sure bet. Like, you need to invest in the hardware vendors if you want to invest in AI. But there's no killer use case yet. Other than, like, in general, like, you can do texts, and obviously you can do songs. But the money isn't in the use cases just yet. That's still a bit on the horizon. And, I mean, I remember talking to Timo, and the question is, with all the knowledge we have and all the logs we have and all the information about like issues and clusters we have, how much can we automate certain things with AI down the road? And that's surely happening, you know? So there's surely stuff going to happen, and we're already using it for different things. But yeah, we'll see how it, like, what the next big one is.
Right. And I think that from an educational standpoint and marketing, ours are easier use cases. On the education side, you need to teach students how to use AI, but you also need to make sure that there's not any kind of plagiarism, or using AI to either write the papers or grade them. But on the other hand, where we are, there are gaps, which is exactly what Udo Azidel said. And so his take on it was more about talking about AI, but what are the major gaps? So I think he brings up a really good point here.
So it is linked to AI, and I have to say I didn't like how much it is hyped even here at KubeCon, which is, looks like an AI con, at least in the morning. But I liked that they talked about all the gaps, what is missing, what needs to be done. And I personally liked the kind of the picture they painted with, okay, we have the infrastructure engineers on one side and the data scientists on the other side. And they don't really talk to each other. They don't understand each other. And we have seen this before with DevOps. So this, we can solve with the DevOps movement. So again, really talking about the challenges, the gaps, the missing pieces in the AI Kubernetes area or cloud native AI, this for me was the best subject so far.
So that was spoken about. He didn't get into more details on what those gaps were, but I bet we can find that in one of the talks afterward.
But that's a general thing. I was at a smart factory a smart factory conference while you were at KubeCon. To a certain extent, really using AI possibly needs a different mindset, and like the infrastructure engineers knows what's wrong. The AI people just want to find it out by themselves, and you kind of need to see if you can mix the two, and how you mix the two. We have going down that road for some time now, making sure we understand how we fix something and have systems learn how we fix something so it can like stand on the shoulders of giants, like small, like people still have a value. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting how that continues, fully agreed.
And of course, it's going to move quickly. And that was also something on to the next subject, which was eBPF. I talked to Frederick from Polar Signals first about that. And he said just overall that for him, actually eBPF really garnered a lot of enthusiasm and excitement. So we'll hear from Frederick first from Polar Signals, and then thereafter Sandy from Grafana Labs. So let's first hear from Frederick, who talks about eBPF and how exciting the tooling is becoming in 2024.
In my opinion, the best all-around topic this year is the eBPF technology, which gets more and more implemented. I visited the KubeCon last year in Amsterdam, and there was kind of, it was like a real new feature or a regrown feature, and this year there are a lot of more tools, which tells me that there's a lot of interest in it. So yeah, that would be the best subject for this year for me.
I mean, I agree, but like just as a non-intrusive thing that can do interesting stuff, lots of the security tools, to my knowledge, go down the eBPF route, just to be able to monitor things and not stand in the way and things. But we'd have to get one of our networking people on there mm-hmm. to really talk about it. We just would like totally butcher the subject. but it's been a long time, and I remember when we started going down the security route like some years ago. There was stuff that was really obtrusive and like killing clusters and saying like, oh yeah, but we're moving to eBPF and that will make it different and so on and so forth. So I'm looking forward to seeing that move forward. I fully agree what will come around for it, and my brain is probably not intelligent enough to really figure out what the interesting use cases are.
I think in the next clip, Sandy from Grafana Labs spoke about how they use it. She even mentioned a couple of the different solutions that they have and how fascinated she is with eBPF.
Okay, so we have use cases. Roll it, Tommy.
At Grafana, we have Bela, which is auto instrumentation using eBPF. But I'd say 80% of my colleagues don't know what Bela is for, have never even heard of Bela, and I'm really surprised. So what fascinates me about it, it's really like magic. So just exploring a little bit of dog fooding and exploring some instrumenting apps. As soon as I ran Bela next to my app that I was already instrumenting manually, I just got more information magically. It was all in a Docker container, super easy to set up.
There you have it.
Okay. We probably need to get a bit deeper into eBPF.
Of course.
But I mean, we're like the cool thing is with that, we kind of figure out what we need to do for one of the next podcasts. So we need to write down, we need to do an eBPF podcast.
Sounds like it will.
Obviously people are interested. We just need people that really know what they're talking about so we can ask the right questions.
Sure, sure. So the next one, we were standing outside of one of the conference centers or conference rooms when gathering people and just asking these quick questions. And we stumbled into two fellows. They're in the financial industry. They asked not to to say what particular financial institution they worked for. And they specifically mentioned WebAssembly.
One of the standout subjects that's being covered at KubeCon for me is definitely WASM and WebAssembly. In particular, WASM Cloud and the WASM component model, I really feel like they're trying to revolutionize the way that we do computing. And of course, KubeCon, it's named after Kubernetes, right? And I think it's really interesting to see a challenger. In a way, they collaborate with Kubernetes, and it works well with Kubernetes, but also it does offer an alternative to Kubernetes. And so I think it's really interesting that they're really innovating in that way and really challenging the status quo and really investing in building, really revolutionizing the way that we build applications.
Yeah, okay. And there is like WASM and Kubernetes and stuff like that. So we'll see how this goes. I see a link in Swarm Malicious that we can link around that. And I remember really Puya talking about it like years ago already when it was starting coming up. Yeah. Do we have more people talking about WebAssembly?
We have one of his colleagues, and I don't know if this is just for them specific to the financial industry, and that's why they find it just so wonderful and perfect, because everybody else was talking about different types of talks, but these guys just both dove right into WebAssembly.
Yeah, so in my opinion, especially the WebAssembly presentations were super interesting to see. So both from I went to the backstage presentation, where in backstage it has a huge plugin architecture, and it was a presentation on using WebAssembly to basically write your plugins. And I feel like that will give a lot of freedom for developers to design these plugins. What was for me an eye-opener, it was also the presentation on WASM and WASM Cloud, where they really showed how to think about your application, not in terms of components. So they showcased, for example, SQL, eventing, living outside of the binary, outside of your business logic. And basically with the premise that if you take it from cloud provider or implementation detail 1 to cloud provider 2, implementation detail 2, that you only need to switch out the implementation provider. And if you do that in WASM or in maybe a custom implementation of that, both are fine. But for me, it was an eye-opener to see in terms of architecture and design of your applications, to take that component design into account.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, WebAssembly at the end is about running in the client to a certain extent. So wow, it will be really interesting to see what the cloud providers think about that, really. So another podcast episode, I'd say.
I loaded up all the best questions and got some good answers. So to veer away a little bit from the more heavier tech topics, one thing that a lot of people have been talking about in the past has been sustainability. So we go back to Penny Resnick with Resync, and specifically to him because he is the owner. Resync is an organization that helps optimize your footprint, essentially. So it is cost reduction naturally, but on the other hand, he talks more about scalability and sustainability. But his take on how much they talked about sustainability was kind of surprising.
What I felt that was underrepresented, at least so far, is a sustainability topic. I believe that sustainability is essential. We as ecosystem, the cloud native ecosystem, we have access to almost unlimited resources, and we produce such massive amounts of carbon emissions that we are overtaking the airline industry. And I would expect to see a lot more, not just in keynotes and in talks, but also in booths, a lot more companies taking stand on this and talking about sustainability and how they are helping to reduce the carbon emissions and not run away with crazy scale and just take over the world.
So he was surprised.
I mean, we can think about getting Resync on the podcast. The thing is, I mean, we have an in there because Michael, one of our ex-colleagues, is one of the other co-founders. And I know they're doing interesting stuff. And obviously, they're going a bit deeper than the normal things I hear. Like, obviously, you can like decrease your footprint, but they're also working with people like, how do you build software that uses less resources, for example? Mm-hmm. So they have more of an all-encompassing view on this subject, and really figuring out where the CO2 is generated and where to move your stuff and where to shift things around and how to build code differently and so on and so forth. The subject will increase. At the moment, I just feel that the cost drive due to the economic situation,
right,
is important for people, and that also is sometimes put under the mantle of sustainability. But more stuff will happen there.
So, right.
Especially with data, and there's a German podcast, GPUs und Gurken, by among Daniel Eichten from Adidas and Carlo Felten, who really talk only about sustainability, which is interesting to hear. Also, like, where do you get the data? Can you make sure that you log the right stuff? That you know where the CO2 is produced, where you're doing things, what you're producing, and so on and so forth over your entire value chain. So there's lots of stuff that's going to happen there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think there's for this particular KubeCon, I think that it was less of a discussion than what we had seen in the past. I think that was just the take on that. Mm-hmm. But we did have the elephant in the room, which was the monetizing open source. And we've seen in the past couple of months how those who haven't found a way to monetize it are closing their doors. So we start off with Courtney Nickerson, who kind of gives us an intro to the topic altogether.
So I think this is a really, really interesting question that's not talked about enough. It depends what you want to define a successful open source project as. If what you mean is that a lot of people are using it for free, then sure, because that's a very ideal way of looking at open source. But this is not the 90s, and open source has turned into a very different beast. And what is not sustainable, since we're always talking about sustainability, is to have things that people are putting an exponential amount of their lives to maintain and make available and not having any return in terms of things that will better their lives so they can invest in their children, invest in their homes, invest in their other human communities and hobbies. So I do think that this is a conversation that needs to be had, the business of open source, because if you can't help people move forward, not just on the tech side, but on the human side, then what are we doing?
Wow. That's a good introduction. And she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yes, and we also finish off we'll listen to about three other people as well discuss it, and I did put her in at the end because this is actually what they're doing at the organization that she works with. I go back to Pini on this. He talks more about open source in general as a community and how you need to have that community to be open source.
Over the years, I met quite a lot of companies doing different things. So on one side, there is a lot of founders or creators of open source projects that they work very hard and struggle to monetize because they don't have business approach or something like that, or they just struggle to monetize. Very few of those projects survive and become meaningful in the ecosystem. On the other side, there is a lot of companies that over time, they didn't build ecosystem or community. Companies like Mesosphere or Mesos ecosystem, or Docker for this purpose. And so what they did, they open sourced their tools, but they had very tight control over the product, which led to very few contributions. And effectively, it's open source, but controlled by single entity, and they can monetize it if they like. But that's not a community. And I think the only successful recent open source project. I mean, super successful, which is Kubernetes. And Kubernetes was donated by Google, and then Google sort of took a step away, and they didn't try to monetize it, not directly at least. And what happened, that the entire community got the opportunity to monetize their parts. So the open source project is heart of this massive, amazing ecosystem, and the monetization is not by single entity, but by everyone. And then there is a very complex sort of forces operate around the Kubernetes and the rest of the CNCF projects. And I think this is the most amazing achievement by this ecosystem, is creating this project that created this community where 12,000-13,000 people can get together and build something that totally dominates the world of infrastructure.
I fully agree with him. Obviously, it's again something we said in one of the last podcasts. Everybody that is contributing to Kubernetes kind of makes money in another way to a certain extent. Even us, in the sense of like managing Kubernetes. Nobody's making money building Kubernetes as such. There's the cloud providers that need it, and so on and so forth. And like that's probably where you see like money to be made if the monetization is different than the building. If the monetization needs to come from the building, then you kind of need to lock things around. We're not yet sure if we're really covering the news, but there are some things that are just fitting rather well. Like Redis is no longer open source.
Right.
It's open source, but they have like a source available license. Everybody can still use it. What they did is they don't want people to provide managed services of the open source version without paying Redis something, because that's just like AWS makes money from providing Redis, and Redis doesn't see anything from it. That's what they want to limit. A company using it by themselves, no problem, fine. You know, and if they want more support, they can ask for it, and they can pay for it, and they get a license, and so on and so forth. But like in general, that's what they want to stop. You know, and Buoyant seems to be rather happy with their decision of making Linkerd non-open source anymore. So like stuff is moving there, and it'll be interesting to see in 2 years or something how that ecosystem changed.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I don't want to like ruin everything, and we have a few more clips to go on.
Yeah. The one that was after that was, did talk about managed services, but you did cover it there. I do have a hidden track from Frederick as the last one, but I'm going to skip over to Courtney Nickerson again. They have a completely different take than just managed services on how to monetize open source.
Company I work for is called KubeShop, and it's an open source accelerator. It finds open source projects that are solving common problems for Kubernetes users throughout the space, and provides services to help them build a business that on top of the open source that they have, oftentimes using that open source project to then solve other problems that can be a commercial offering. Because if you can't make any money on what you're actually building, then you can't maintain your team. You actually can't maintain the development of the open source or the maintenance of the open source. So what we actually spend our time doing is promote open source by helping people find a way to monetize a secondary project on top of what they're already building, to be able to have enough money to actually pay the maintainers to not only better business value through the enterprise projects that they've built on top of their open source, but to also be able to fund the maintenance of the open source that is actually the foundation of the project that's being used in the enterprise world.
I like KubeShop.
I mean, why not? You know, it makes so much sense.
And especially because many of the open source projects come from developers that, sorry to say, don't have a strong business acumen. They want to build great software.
Right.
So that idea comes second. I mean, thinking back around Giant Swarm, we always said like infrastructure will be open source, pretty simple, which kind of leads to the fact either we become consultants, which we don't want to, or we run a managed service, which sounds a lot more long-term viable, because not everybody needs to run this or should run this by themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came from. But we're like, like Henning Thiemann and me, we have this mix of technology and business and whatnot as a founding group that kind of always tries to think about how we will fund this. So I fully agree there, and I like it that they're building a business to help open source projects succeed. That's a great idea.
I think so too. Okay, so that covers the majority of the questions that we asked. When I did ask Frederick from Polar Signal what his favorite talk was, he took a step back and he said, "Well, I think I could blend in what I see as the future. And maybe we can talk about that." So it didn't really fit exactly, but I do want to have it as this hidden track. And so the word super interesting comes up with him a couple times with chip sizes, where the Apple M2 chip is 12 nanometers wide. And he's claiming that we're pretty close to the physical limits of our hardware. And he's talking about that alongside how Polar Signal, as well as another company called Grok, are tackling this difference, specifically when it comes to inference.
So obviously, if we look at all of the keynotes that have been given today, I think it's very obvious that there's a lot of AI buzz happening also at KubeCon. And I think this is super interesting because there's a really interesting industry trend that's happening. And Apple actually put it really interestingly in one of their keynotes last year where they were introducing the M2 chip. Some of the components on those chips are now 12 nanometers wide. A silicon atom is 0.2 nanometers. That means we're pretty close to the physical limits known to us of how small we can make hardware, right? This kind of has pretty huge repercussions for the entire industry. It means that hardware is no longer getting faster just by, you know, producing smaller transistors. And this is a big deal for the entire industry. And I think this is going to have two major things to happen. One is we're going to see more and more specialized hardware. And we're already seeing this in the AI space. There's a company called Grok who created this chip specifically for inference, to basically, you know, run inference of like Llama faster than anyone else, faster than all the graphics cards providers, NVIDIA or whatever, right? And this is super interesting because it kind of proves that point that we have to build either custom hardware for problems or, and this is kind of where we come in, we need to make use of existing hardware better. And what we do at Polar Signals is we essentially can give you down to the line number information where resources are being spent. And having this information allows us to do something about that.
I just had a lot of conversations about Grok, so I know what he means. Mm-hmm. Important to note, Grok is just about the I have a trained model and now somebody asks a question and gets an answer. Just the ask question, get an answer thing. It's not training the model. So that's where you still need the NVIDIA graphic cards and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's just for that bit that Grok is important, but it seems to be orders of a magnitude cheaper. And we already know that Google has their own chips and so on and so forth, and AWS has their own chips, and everybody's building their own chips, and we'll see what Apple does. And they already put out like some information about where the AI future will go with it running locally on your iPhone and stuff. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the clips.
That's it. Nice. That sums it up. Yeah, we had those five major topics. We had a couple other ones. We asked if KubeCon had a theme song, what would it be? Only one lady answered it. She literally said, "It's Raining Men." But
that's a good one.
Yeah, it was good. It just didn't fit in this entire conversation because it just kind of goes in a whole different direction. So I kept that out, but I had to drop that little piece of knowledge.
I think we're pretty much at the end of our time limit. Mm-hmm. I'd quickly go so we don't have to go next time, like 2-3 news items we still have, and we'll link in there. Seems that the EuroCloud Consortium CISPR calls for an investigation into Broadcom. Mm-hmm. That's the cloud infrastructure providers in Europe. So if you do an announcement and just 2-3 months later you're sued, okay, that's interesting. We have a link to a spot instance availability map that is nice. And actually, I think that's an old one, but Cloudflare actually uses photos of 100 lava lamps to get random numbers. Oh, wow. They have like in their lobby, they have 100 lava lamps that are on and like stuff is moving. They're making photos and based on that, they're creating random numbers.
Oh, that is random.
That is pretty, like 100 lava lamps is pretty random.
Yeah.
So that's really a fun one.
Clever.
Really cool. That really looking forward to getting the feedback from people, and gladly everybody send us your other answers and tell us what you think. I'm looking forward to many more discussions on Twitter and elsewhere about these subjects, and we already have somebody lined up for our next podcast, and this time it will be with a company using Kubernetes for some interesting stuff. So we'll have our first really external guest that is on the show live after we tried this guest thing, thanks to you, Tommy.
I met a lot of great people.
Yeah, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And I suggest we'll cut this in afterwards because mm-hmm. we don't have it in our audio files. I have a second Sunos tong that will put okay. at the end of this.
You want to finish it off? Maybe we can have it while we're talking. It can.
Ja, ich bin ein Tech-Guru und ich weiß, was ich tu. Ich hau die Lines raus, zeig dir, wie es geht, du. Denn ich rock das Kubernetes, ich bin der Mann. Auf KubeCon bin ich der Chef, ja, das checkst du dann. Pods und Services, Deployment, ja, wir sind am Start. Microservices und Container, wir sind smart. Skalierbarkeit und Hochverfügbarkeit, alles easy. In der Kubernetes-Welt, ja, wir sind die Kings der Scene. KubeCon, wir sind da, in der Cloud sind wir zu Haus. Jeden Code deployen wir, das ist unser größtes Chancestück. Kubernetes, das ist der Trend, wir sind die Champions vom Team. Kube, Kubernetes, das Hacker-Manifest ist unser Reim.